At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Professor Gemma Sharp. Gemma joins me from Monash University to discuss the work that they've been doing on AI, creating chatbots for eating disorder recovery and to support parents and carers. We also speak about future research with robots, and this is a really, really exciting episode for future potentials of integrating AI into health and more specifically into eating disorder treatment. So, AI for body image and eating disorders. This is extremely exciting. I now work in marketing, and so ChatGPT has become a good friend of mine.
Of course.
So I'm very excited when you got in touch about this. So do you want to tell us a bit? I guess people might have heard your previous episode, but if not, do you want to just tell us a bit about yourself and the research that you do to start us off?
Yeah, no worries at all. Thanks for the opportunity to be on the podcast again. It's great to be back. And I'm based at Monash University in Melbourne. It's actually quite a sunny day here today. I think we're getting a bit of summer. Mm. It's been a bit of a late one for us in
Melbourne.
Lucky
you.
Indeed.
It's -4 here.
Oh, I think we're over 30 here. So, yeah, everyone's in their like summer dresses and stuff. So yeah, I'm at Monash and I'm lucky enough to lead the body image and eating disorders research at Monash. So that's my research gig, and I'm also a research lead and senior clinical psychologist at our new eating disorder services at the Alfred Hospital, which is a very large public hospital very close to Monash. So basically my workplaces are next to one another, which is really fun.
It's amazing. And that's also great that you're, you know, right next door to each other. I can imagine that makes researching a lot easier.
So what is it that you've been working on lately?
Oh, gosh. I mean, what haven't we been doing, Han? But we have 7 research streams. I think I have the most overworked team in the universe. But we love our digital body image or digital eating disorder stream, and that's a stream of research we've been doing for over 5 years now. I just tell you, it's just flown by. And I suppose the aim of that stream is how can we use artificial intelligence in the prevention and treatment of eating disorders. And 5 years ago, we did not have the fantastic technology we have now. So I think the start of it was just basically trying to convince people that AI wasn't going to be super harmful. But now it seems to have been really embraced by the broader community. Obviously there are issues and I'm sure we'll touch on them, but so we had a slower start, but now it's, I suppose, really exploding. We have all these different projects going, so in prevention, early intervention and treatment for the person experiencing the eating disorder as well as the people around them. And we've actually just got some funding for robotics. So this is a brand new area. So not just chatbots, but robotics helping with meal support. So they are the robots that you think they are if you imagine one in your head. So that's new work we'll be doing in 2024.
So is that going to be like a physical in-person robot?
Exactly, like sitting on your kitchen table, encouraging you through meal times.
Oh my because God.
Yeah, we know that's a really hard time, and we think this robot can, you know, give some good skill advice, provide some nice distraction, play games with the person. So yeah, that's very, very recent, in conjunction with all of our conversational AI work.
Wow, that is actually blown my mind. That is something that would
everyone
be
wants to. Everyone's like, I want to do the robot co-design. Like, so many people who are keen, which is great. I can't wait to play with it either. Very lucky to be collaborating with my excellent colleagues at Monash Engineering for that one.
Yeah, and do you know something that's just kind of, this is very much just coming to my head because I didn't even know that this would be a possible thing, but I think something that could be really good there about that robotics is, and I know that you've done a bit of work on AI for carers as well, but so much of the time I think that one of the real difficulties in eating sort of treatment is when somebody is at home, the parents are having to do all of that hard work.
Absolutely.
With meal support and everything, and it creates a divide in the household because obviously the last thing somebody with an eating disorder wants to do is to eat. And so if you've got that robot, which is almost, I'm sure you're going to make it as like humanistic as possible, but it is also not a human. So you can sort of take it out on the robot. And it's not going to affect you and your family.
I actually did. That was one of the questions, something we discussed really early on, was like, how easily do these robots break? Like if someone is frustrated and throws something at the robot. And they're quite hardy, which is good. And absolutely, as you were saying, like, you know, taking a bit of the load off parents and carers, but also if someone's at home by themselves, like maybe, you know, they've been discharged from inpatient, or, you know, they're doing a day program and then they've got that support 24/7 rather than just when they're at the treatment facility. So we think it's hopefully going to plug a few gaps.
Yeah. And I feel like it will keep things consistent as well, because at the end of the day, you know, parents, carers, whatever, will be emotional about what they're going through. They're not trained either to support somebody with an eating disorder.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Then the person will have that consistency throughout their treatment, which sounds amazing.
We hope ultimately that the robot learns with the person, that there's that personalization, like, oh, you know, Han really likes it when we play, you know, Tetris. I'm sure you don't like Tetris, by the way. But I don't know, Candy Crush. Han likes it when we play Candy Crush before the meal, so we'll do Candy Crush.
Mine is Killer Sudoku. That's what gets
there
me through.
There you go.
My meals.
Thank you for telling me. That's another good one. So yeah, hopefully that learning with the person as well, like what works for them and what doesn't. Just like, you know, parents and carers are doing all the time. They're learning, oh, that strategy didn't work last time, so let's try something different.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said about co-design there.
Yes.
Will that be sort of people with eating disorders working with you guys to
100%.
Determine the best approach for this?
Yeah, so people with a lived experience, parents, carers, supporters, as well as other health professional service providers. So it's quite a extensive co-design we've got planned. But we do this with all of our projects. So we actually find it so fun. It's an absolute joy to do this work, and an honor as well. So we try to make sure we have as many voices in that co-design as possible, such that we have the strongest product end finding that we can.
Yeah, no, I think that's brilliant. I think there's something really important to be said for having people with lived experience partake in this sort of research. And I think especially for
100%.
Such a novel concept, because, you know, I think you kind of touched on it at the start, like people were very sceptical, and I still think people are quite sceptical about AI and all that kind of stuff now. And so to have somebody with an eating disorder get involved and, you know, think about the logistics of it all. And, you know, you do want to feel like somebody understands what you're going through, but equally there's the sort of logistical side of things as well. But
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine the robot sounding like me? It'd be really boring. So I'm glad there's lots of different voices coming through all of our tools. Uh-huh.
No, that is brilliant. I just have I don't know if this is a stupid question, but like, what will it look like? Will it look like a human, or will it look like metal, like beep beep beep?
More the beep beep beep. Like, it'll have like two arms, two legs, and a body, like kind of like a doll kite robot. But it's not it's not meant to look superhuman. Like, it's not some kind of cyborg type thing. It still has that robot look about it.
Yeah, sure. Okay. No, that sounds really cool. And I have quite a few other questions, but I'm going to kind of ask them to you alongside of the chatbot AI stuff, because that's what that's what we were going to talk about today. But absolutely, when you've done more research on them, let's have you back for a third.
One more project, Hannah, and I always get like the next invite. I don't know what I'm going to do in addition to robots, but I'll try and impress you.
I don't know how you're
going
to get better than that.
Yes.
The chatbot that you have created for body image and eating disorder treatment.
Yes.
Where did the sort of thought of that come? Where did the idea start from?
So I think when it comes to AI and mental health, suicide prevention they were the first kind of adopters. And I think the reason being that their helplines are, you know, kind of our crisis support that everyone contacts. And I was chatting with some colleagues back in 2018, and they were saying, look, the helpline can't manage the load. We're going to use a conversational AI agent to help shoulder some of the load. And I was like, okay, because I know other helpline services, particularly our eating disorder helpline services in Australia, are feeling exactly the same, struggling under the load. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, why couldn't this be adopted? I do think, like, and suicide prevention, obviously there's a whole art to it. I suppose eating disorders are quite diverse, eating disorders and body image. Mm-hmm. So we knew we had a huge task ahead of us, but I was very keen to make sure that folks who are experiencing eating disorders and their loved ones got access to the best technology, the best service. So that was always my aim. And I suppose I've kind of tried to keep doing that with all our different initiatives.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that is exactly what you're doing, project after project, bringing the best treatment.
I think my team are like, can we just finish this one and then go to the next one? Because I'm always coming out to them with a new idea, and I think they just go, oh, no, she's got another idea. Anyway, sorry, Hannah.
And it's not small. No, they're not small projects either, are they? They're like groundbreaking, like this is going to transform.
Yeah, and then we go, oh yeah, this is actually much harder than we thought. But I'd rather have that optimism and problem solve along the way. And that's what the co-design is for as well. You learn so much through that process.
Yeah. And, you know, slight tangent here, but that's absolutely what my thought about recovery has been, in that yes, it's going to be really hard, but I would prefer to be a year down the line and be closer to being recovered than be a year down the line and be the same. And I guess it's the same with you and your research, and like, it's gonna be really difficult, but you know, if we do this research every day, we're getting a step closer to, you know, making it better, making it more powerful, having stronger treatment approaches for people.
100%. I feel like folks with eating disorders, as much as the research was definitely chugging along, I think now's really the time to run ahead. We've got no time to wait, no time to lose. And that's how I run my research team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, okay, with the chatbot, let's discuss the skepticism about it, because I think that's still the elephant in the room. When I watched your lecture that you did, you spoke about the fact that, you know, you had to train the AI, and that, you know, there was a lot of talk in the news about eating disorder chatbots providing dietary advice and weight loss. So how have you ensured with your chatbot that it's safe and that it will provide the treatment that people do need?
Thank you for that question, Han. What a lovely question. I really appreciated the setup there. So I think, like, historically, our very first chatbots used extremely limited AI capabilities. And I think that's how we kept it very safe, that it was all pre-trained answers, and anything that it didn't understand, it just said that, I don't understand. And whilst that was frustrating for users, 100% empathise there, we went for very low risk, but we knew the evidence base was there because we'd written these pages and pages of dialogue. Now when I look back on it, I'm like, oh, God, that was a lot, wasn't it? I'm glad we could shortcut that a bit now. So that's how we started learning, and it was because of all those conversations that our earliest chatbots had, we started to build a language model. So like things like ChatGPT and other ones that have come out now, that they're trained on the whole of the internet. So it's a big training database, isn't it, the whole of the internet? Whereas our chatbots are trained on a much smaller set of data that came from those very limited.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Chatbots to start with. So it means that while it doesn't have necessarily the diversity of answers that ChatGPT will have, I actually never want it to have that diversity because I know that, for example, it will start giving dietary advice. It will start giving weight loss tips because, let's face it, the internet is a cesspool. So, so in that way, we keep control over it. But with every new initiative, we add to the training. So, Kid and Jem were our first chatbots, and they were very much that prevention, psychoeducation, just your absolute nuts and bolts of eating disorders. It was because of Kit and Jem that we could move to Essie, who is our first treatment offering. So Essie is a single session early intervention chatbot. So people, they've been referred for treatment, they're on wait lists. We don't want people to be on wait lists getting bored and unmotivated. So it was because of all the training that Kit and Jem had that we could do a treatment offering and feel like we could do it safely. And obviously with treatment, we had to think about alert systems and stuff like that, and better training around risk words like suicide risk words, as well as physical health indicators. So I suppose it's been really incremental for us. We haven't suddenly gone, let's do an open AI eating disorder chatbot. It's been the complete opposite of that.
God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people who are on Snapchat, that bot, I've heard some interesting things about the advice that the Snapchat bot gives. So we know how it's kind of, if people try and shortcut it, it is not a good offering. It's not a safe offering. Of course, you can do all the negative training, if someone asks, how do I lose weight? Obviously, don't tell them. And that's, I suppose, where we're up to now. So our latest offerings are using generative AI. So I'm sure your listeners are across this, but just in case, basically being able to create its own responses from the big data set that it's been trained on. And so we've just been prototyping our bot for carers, which has been super exciting. And so we've been making sure, like, for example, I will test it out and I'll say, I really want to lose weight. Can you help me? And we know that this carer bot goes, this is not my purpose. I'm not going to help you with this. I am going to help you with X, Y, Z. So we know it's had that good training, that it's not going to go off the rails. But it's as much as you do all the positive response training, there's a lot of negative response training that you need to do too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's just such a relief to hear that, it knows that's not where I can provide that advice right now. And when you say about this treatment, what sort of thing is it? Is it kind of like, you know, does someone go on and have a therapy session with the chatbot, or is it kind of an educational resource? How does that look?
Yeah, so EDSE, our single session chatbot. So it's actually in clinical trial around Australia at the moment, and we've been really thrilled with the results so far. Yeah, Essie is we're a bit in love with Essie's characters. I suppose that's something our group is known for as well, having like quite cute characters for all of our tools. It will help with the merchandise, I think. So Essie again, completely grounded in evidence for what's good for people to hear early on. And it's promoting that regular eating, teaching people about how you get into vicious cycles of dieting, that kind of stuff. And it's quite a multimedia experience. So they're doing little activities, they're watching videos, they're having that chat. So in that way, it's again a step up that we made it a more immersive experience. Takes people about half an hour. In an ideal world, we would have Essie checking back in on people until they actually get in-person treatment. So that would be like the next step that we have that it being available multiple times. At the moment, it's they do the one-off session. They can log back in and see all the resources, but they can't chat with Essie again. So again, I suppose it shows the incremental nature of this research and just making sure that what you're doing works and then adding on it bit by bit.
Yeah. No, that sounds brilliant. It sounds very much like a CBT approach in terms of like the educational piece and that
indeed,
sort of thing.
Indeed. And that's, you know, it won't be everyone's cup of tea, and we totally appreciate that. Fortunately, thus far, it has seemed to be people's cup of tea, but I wonder if maybe people are self-selecting going, oh yeah, that sounds all right, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But you know, everyone who participates, we learn something from them. And I've been quite blown away with how well people have done the activities. And I'm just going, they're doing better, you know, better job than me as a, you know, early psychologist. It's quite impressive. I suppose you can't go too wrong with those like fundamental messages, particularly sort of the regular eating, which we know, you know, the sooner you start on that, the sooner you can make treatment gains.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking about, like, and I'm sure that you have a mind of, you know, all these endless possibilities. But I did a podcast a while back with Lindsay, who created an app called Beanbag Health. And they basically, it was an app that you worked through, I don't know how many weeks it was, but it was a very much a CBT based approach, like what you've done here with the, you know, the educational piece and the resources. And I think that sort of thing would be fantastic to act as almost an intervention for people, like you've said, that can't currently get treatment, but they're waiting for it, because you've then got all that education that you can then learn all of that in that period of time. You've got the chatbot with you for support and any questions that you have. But then by the time you actually get to a treatment with like an actual human being, the clinical psychologist or whatever, you've already done that education. You've potentially started regular eating, and you've got yourself into a position where you can actually engage in therapy. Whereas I think so many people, they come into therapy and there's so much work to do before you can actually start therapy that they then maybe don't even touch the surface with, you know, if we're thinking about the NHS specifically, you're given a certain number of weeks that you have treatment for, might not even get to start actually recovering.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, what's the point of collecting dust on a wait list? If someone's motivated to seek treatment, we want them to be able to get it as soon as they want it. And I think, you know, you raise a really good point there, Han. And with Essie, we actually have this section which is like messages to the psychologist, you know, things they want to work on first up, so that the psychologist has that information really quickly. So it's like, okay, so this is an area you want to work on straight away. So it's kind of a good little messaging portal as well there too. But we have the same in Australia, that that there's a cap on number of sessions per year. And as you absolutely rightly said, if someone has already made big headway, they've maybe knocked off six sessions or something, doing great work by themselves, supported by an app or a chatbot.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also builds on, I don't know what the situation is in Australia, but I assume it's probably quite similar to the UK in that our resources are so limited in terms of people and their time. So this just seems amazing. You know, I'm not saying that that this is like, how do I say this? Being a clinical psychologist and providing someone therapy, I don't think a chatbot would be able to, I mean, maybe in the future, I don't know, but there's that empathetic, like there's a lot of skill there.
Yes.
But kind of just going through the educational piece with them, that is something that's very much, you know, I provide this information to you, you take that information in. It's not really that compassionate element to it.
Like, I think the tone of the chatbot is something that comes up in all of our research. And like, because we'll try and write things that sound like quite empathetic. And I think it's kind of a balance between factual and empathetic, because like, imagine if the chatbot said, oh, I know how just how you feel. And the person will go, no, you're not, you're a robot. You're lying to me. So we kind of get around it with other ways. Like, it's quite common to feel this way. You're certainly not alone in this. Like, there's other ways that you can phrase it to still have that nice welcoming tone, particularly using emojis as well. We use heaps of them in all of our tools. So I think it will never have that lovely person-to-person contact that I really enjoy in my clinical work. And that'll never be outsourced, but I think it can have a welcoming, motivating tone.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a brilliant initiative, and I think and then allow people that are doing the psychology work to actually focus on like the more deep, intense stuff with people, and hopefully recovery will then flourish because you can work through that stuff with people.
Absolutely. And that's the feedback we've been getting. The psychologists have appreciated that they've been able to have that head start as well. Like, they're like, great, psychoeducation, tick, regular eating going pretty well, all things considered. Oh. Yeah, let's start working on, you know, those like inflexible thinking and stuff like that, you know, the stuff that takes time, more time.
Yeah. That you need to be regularly eating to actually start to work on anyway, because if you've got a stuck frame, you can't do the psychological work anyway.
Tell me about it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyone, you know, I'm sure, you know, quite a few of your listeners have been through this process, and I mean, when I'm introducing the idea to patient/clients, I just go, you know, this isn't going to be an overnight thing. I don't expect you to come back next week and have regular eating sorted. This is a work in progress.
Yeah. And as I was just saying that then about a staff brain, I did just think, was this done with all eating disorders, or was it just a specific group of people?
Yeah, and another great point, Han. And again, the co-design process really helped us sort this out, because we didn't want it to be diagnosis specific. We wanted, you know, disordered eating through to, you know, binge eating disorder, anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa. We wanted everyone to be able to benefit. And the way we got around it was some different pathways down the bot, some like with the videos showing different options of activities. So we did end up covering off on all eating disorders and disordered eating in it. And I suppose we've had people coming through with all different diagnoses, and obviously we're analysing the data as we get it to see if any group sort of benefits more. But we really wanted anyone who was struggling with eating issues to be able to use it.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And I think that's a really important thing, that we don't just focus on one group of diagnoses. Sure. I think this sort of thing can be used for everybody. And often people with, you know, maybe if we're thinking about eating disorders that don't necessarily get the treatment support, this could offer, you know, a really good intervention for people. And I'm just thinking as well, so we've talked about the AI and how that works for people with eating disorders. What's the sort of approach or kind of model for the carers? Is that like a kind of supportive space, or is that an educational piece as well?
That's it. Well, again, co-designing, still evolving. Happy to hear your thoughts, Han. Always, always welcome. Because see you doing some caring work just there with your cat.
They want their breakfast.
So we, I mean, ultimately we would like this carer buddy, we're calling it, to be almost like a kind of a Hey Google, like kind of a font of all knowledge. Like okay. my young person isn't eating, what can I do? Like we want it to be that kind of assistant. Obviously, we've trained it on a lot of educational material already, but we want it to be, as you were saying before, people who are at their wit's end because they love their young person or whoever it is so much, and they're just going, I don't know what I'm doing. And it's to answer those kinds of questions, because we know, like, you know, when the therapist is there, like they can help you, and you know, thinking a sort of more family-based therapy approach or Maudsley, the person's there, the health professional team are there, but, you know, as you said, when you go home, they're not there all the time. And it's for those moments where you're just going, I don't know what I'm doing.
No, that sounds brilliant. I think that would be so supportive for somebody, like you say, at their wit's end, I don't know, kind of, you know, what to do. And I think also one thing I always think, and this shouldn't be the case at all, but I think it is the case for parents and carers, is the shame and the guilt and I don't know what I should be doing for my loved one right now, or I don't want to reach out because I should know how to handle this, or I'm ashamed.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I feel guilty that my loved one is struggling so much and I can't help. So again, it's almost like what we were talking about at the start with the robot, is that you can ask a robot a question and not feel that shame or that guilt.
Absolutely.
And get the support that you need.
Yeah, and with every question that the parent asks, it's helping the model improve. So I'm just like, ask away, ask any question you like. It's helping us all the time to learn. There's no way it can't help us. So I 100% agree there, Han, that oh my gosh, parents and carers, talk about the unsung heroes of eating disorder treatment. So yeah, like I'm there, my fancy health professional self, and I get to go home, but they go home and the person, the loved one with the eating disorder is still 100% struggling. So they need all the help they can get, because it is just so challenging for everyone, you know, siblings included, grandparents, whoever's there. It's a tough thing to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's building that support around a carer so that they not only can support their loved one, but they feel supported themselves, and then they therefore are supporting themselves. And I think through you know, one thing I would really encourage with the chatbot, and I don't know whether this is something you can kind of manipulate, but
always happy to hear,
you know, when carers are, you know, asking for support on things and stuff, to really build that sort of narrative of, this is not your fault, and you know, thank you so much for being here to support your loved one. But also, are you making sure that you're taking time out for yourself? You know, because I think you'll probably get some very distressed questions on there, because people are at their wit's end of, I just don't know what to do. But it's always been my approach, is encouraging people to take that time out for themselves and to really understand that no matter how much you kind of put into this, until that individual decides today is the day that I'm going to start recovering, all you can do is be there for them. And I know that was something that my mum really, really struggled with. She went to every single course. She did all of that and the other, and she put her soul into it. And, you know, unfortunately, it took time for then me to want to start to recover. And then once that happened, she was like, oh my God, praise the Lord, hallelujah. What, like, why now?
Yes.
But yeah.
100%, Hannah. You're hitting all the right notes. I remember in our very first chatbot kit, when we had our carer dialogue, certainly the please don't blame yourself. This is not your fault. Like, it was some of the first dialogue I remember us writing. And that just being so important for parents and carers to hear, because isn't it a tough job being a parent and carer anyway? And then you're going, it's all my fault that this person is having this issue when it is not. And you're absolutely doing your best. And that's all we can ask. And as you said, encouraging parents and carers to get their own support as well, taking some time out for themselves, maybe getting the robot to do some of their meal support sessions so they can do something different.
So they could go and see their friends, yeah. And I think that's definitely just giving yourself, time to refill that cup too, because you can't pour from an empty cup. And it's so important that,
nicely said,
you're not bombarded by frustrations towards eating disorder. Yeah. And you can actually, care for your loved one in the way that you want to.
100%. And I mean, as you said at the start of this, Hannah, it's like it's a brain disease. This is not how your young person is normally. This is not how they want to be. No one would choose this. No one would wish it on their worst enemy.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? And that's often the thing that can get so frustrating, is like, why won't you just help yourself? So I think to have the AI step in and provide some calming techniques would not go amiss for sure.
Absolutely. Let's all take three big breaths together. Absolutely.
Maybe you should before you, the person comes on and types in their question all frantically, and then the chatbot says, "Oh, continue. Let's do some box breathing together."
Exactly. Yeah, I could tell. I know we've been looking into this. Just words that are used, the style of typing. We can tell quite a lot about the user. So I think we'll be able to pick up on even more as time goes on, not just the broad sentences that are given to us, the style in which it's written. There's some cool new research coming out about that.
Yeah, and that was something else I wanted to just touch on, was when you did your lecture, you were saying that it can, the AI can be more personalized because it collects the data from your mobile phone and stuff.
Yes, this is work we're again doing right now. So yes, I suppose this is an area we haven't touched on as much, Han, but relapse prevention, or someone's just been discharged from a service, there's a high risk that they might return to some of their old unhelpful habits. And so we know that mobile phones do collect a lot of data on us without us even being aware of it. It's not as creepy as people think, though. Certainly the privacy of phones has increased a lot in recent years because, things like Facebook's selling people's data and stuff like that. Not cool. But certainly we can be... So through a mixture of what we call passive sensing, so that's that data that's collected in the background of your phone without you even knowing. So say, if you're making a call or you're typing, it picks up on that. If you're sleeping, it can tell that. If you're moving around, it can tell that. So there are certain inbuilt sensors that that are collecting data all the time, but there's also active sensing as well. So we can ask people, hey, what have you just been doing? And people are quite used to that kind of research, ecological momentary analysis, EMA. So what we're doing is kind of a mixture of the two and seeing, okay, so we know that people have just been discharged. We want them to feel supported when they leave the service. And so, yes, we can do this prediction modeling, again, using AI and machine learning. And we can connect it with our pre-existing tools. So, KitGem, Essie, Carer Buddy, we have these, but the issue is that at the moment we're relying on people to reach out to them. Whereas if the mobile phone goes, hey, I wonder if you're feeling a bit distressed, I wonder if you're feeling like you might want to engage in a behavior that's not going to be super helpful. So that's kind of, that's really the holy grail of personalized medicine there, sort of knowing that you might be about to do something before maybe even you quite realize it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I imagine like picking up on certain things that you're doing and the building almost like a timeline of behaviors, like, oh, they're doing that right now and now they've done that, and then that's led to them feeling very distressed or whatever. That's amazing to, because like you say, I think often it can be things that you don't even realize that you're doing. So for the AI to pick up on that, that seems like a really incredible, because you can almost then catch it before somebody's fallen into the behavior.
Exactly. And we call it, they're affectionately known as JIT eyes, return of the JIT eye, just in time adaptive interventions. So this is absolutely, yeah, the holy grail. This is, and I suppose in other disorders, like say I have some good colleagues in epilepsy, they've been able to use like wearables, like watches, mobile phones, to be able to predict when someone is about to have a seizure. So that is really, really cool research. And we're taking, you know, we're learning everything we can from all these other areas and saying, hey, can we do this well with eating disorders? And that, again, there's been some recent research on this, and it looks like we can do some pretty decent predictions. So we just want people's, I suppose, their devices to be as therapeutic as possible.
What sort of things are you looking at when you kind of build the predictions? Is it like an elevated heart rate or?
Yeah, and I mean, I think, Han, that the world's your oyster here in terms of sensors. Uh-huh. So, and I think this, I mean, this has been kind of the bit of the trick that we've noticed with eating disorders, say, versus other conditions. Like, you know, we don't necessarily want people to be logging all their fitness stuff all the time. That's not necessarily good for recovery, is it? So in that way, we have a more, I suppose, select group of sensors. But certainly, as you're saying, like kind of that physiological agitation, which we know can certainly precede an episode, it can absolutely be tracked.
Wow. This just is, my mind has been absolutely blown, because I think when ChatGPT first came out, it was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I can ask it what I should have for dinner and like to send me some recipes. That's and cute. Actually, you don't think about like how like incredible this is and how far this can go.
Absolutely. I so should say I guess, ChatGPT is like, I've given it a bit of a bad rap, but I should say that like all of us in everything are using it, and I think it's amazing that we have these tools, and I suppose AI is only as good as the training it's had. So, you know, if you just want general answers, as you said, what to have for dinner, I think ChatGPT will do that well for you.
Yeah. I think it's, from my perspective, it's almost, it gives everybody a leg up, you know, like as an example for me working in marketing, my creative capabilities and like ideas are only as kind of far as my brain can take me, and that's limited to one brain. But by me typing in like, you know, what sort of campaign could I do for this initiative, it gives me loads of ideas. I still then have to go away and create the campaign and put that emotive element to it, and it still requires me to be there, but it's given me that step up of, rather than taking weeks to determine the campaign, it's given me loads of ideas, and then I can work out the best one. And I think that for me is where AI is going to help us the most, is to give us that leg up of, rather than one brain, it's like 100%. The world's brains coming together to then create even more incredible content.
I agree, Han, and I think, I mean, you know, you'll hear people saying, oh, with ChatGPT, people will forget how to write, or, you know, kind of these quite catastrophizing responses. Yeah. But I agree. I think it's, I suppose, kind of like our chatbots are, we don't ever expect it to replace human health professionals ever. But if it can help us do our jobs better, faster, and more effectively, then why wouldn't we use it? I can't imagine not using a tool that can help you.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, if it can help, then let's absolutely go for it. I mean, that's all been absolutely fascinating, Gemma, and I just can't believe that, you know, it's even possible. Is there a way for anyone to get involved if they're listening and they're like, I want to support with this, or, you know, this sounds like it'd be something I want to get involved in?
Oh, believe me, we are always we are always looking for fantastic people to be involved. So thank you so much, Han. I should say we're actually doing this kind of hybrid worldwide event in September 2024 where we're going to be asking people to join a big research consortium. So I'll make sure I give you those details, Han, because we're really excited about that. It seems like every September I like to do some big event now. So that's, we're going to be working on that quite a lot in the next couple of months. But yes, people can always contact me at Monash. So if you just Google my name, Gemma Sharp and Monash, you'll find my staff page. I'm also on Twitter/X under the handle of @GemmaSharp11. Are people still on Twitter? I don't know. /X. I need to.
Consideration of mine.
Agreed. Like, maybe I need to diversify my platforms. Feel free, peoples, to yell out where you think we should go as well. But yes, certainly always my Monash email. I'm always very happy to hear from people, hear their thoughts, because I've just had some new staff join me this year, and they've all been involved in like multiple co-design projects already. And it's just, they tell me they enjoy it. I hope they actually mean that, that they get to see these kind of creations come to life. And I know, generally speaking, the people who come along with us at the journey, they're like, wow, we saw this as like a kernel of an idea, you know, 6 to 12 months ago. And here we are with this fully formed initiative. So I think everyone gets that sense of achievement with being involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm just thinking in my life how and when I can get to Melbourne to come and meet you guys and get involved.
In September 2024. Awesome. You're more than welcome to our event in September 2024. It's going to be the
bomb. I feel like I need to save a little bit. I need to save a bit before I can travel to Melbourne.
I should say, Han, it's hybrid, so everyone has a chance to join wherever they are in the world. Because even the time zone, we're just going, oh, gosh, because I had that with my event this year. I had some lovely people in the States, for example, getting up at 3 a.m. to watch the presentation, which was very nice of them. So we do get that. Yeah, it's it'll be recorded as well. Because we want everyone to see what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's well. I very much look forward to it. And actually, one of my friends is from Melbourne and she's moving back next week, so I don't need any more excuses apparently to get over to Melbourne. Thank you so much, Gemma. It's been an absolute pleasure. Have a nice evening, and I'm gonna go and do my day.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a big one ahead. All good wishes.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much.
Not at all. My pleasure.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.